Chapter 28, CEO. Still crazy after all these years. Tim Cook. When Steve Jobs returned to Apple and produced the Think Different ads and the iMac in his first year, it confirmed what most people already knew, that he could be creative and a visionary. He had shown that during his first round at Apple. What was less clear was whether he could run a company. He had definitely not shown that during his first round. Jobs threw himself into the task with a detail-oriented realism that astonished those who were used to his fantasy that the rules of this universe need not apply to him. He became a manager, which is different from being an executive or visionary, and that pleasantly surprised me, recalled Ed Woolard, the board chair who lured him back. His management mantra was focus. He eliminated excess product lines and cut extraneous features in the new operating system software that Apple was developing. He let go of his control freak desire to manufacture products in his own factories and instead outsourced the making of everything from the circuit boards to the finished computers. And he enforced on Apple's suppliers a rigorous discipline. When he took over, Apple had more than 2 months' worth of inventory sitting in warehouses, more than any other tech company. Like eggs and milk, computers have a short shelf life, so this amounted to at least a $500 million hit to profits. By early 1998, he had halved that to a month. Jobs' successes came at a cost, since velvety diplomacy was still not part of his repertoire. When he decided that a division of Airborne Express wasn't delivering spare parts quickly enough, he ordered an Apple manager to break the contract. When the manager protested that doing so could lead to a lawsuit, Jobs replied, "Just tell them if they fuck with us, they'll never get another fucking dime from this company, ever." The manager quit. There was a lawsuit, and it took a year to resolve. "My stock options would be worth $10 million had I stayed," the manager said, "but I knew I couldn't have stood it, and he'd have fired me anyway." The new distributor was ordered to cut inventory 75% and did. Under Steve Jobs, there's a zero tolerance for not performing, its CEO said. At another point, when VLSI Technology was having trouble delivering enough chips on time, Jobs stormed into a meeting and started shouting that they were fucking dickless assholes. The company ended up getting the chips to Apple on time, and its executives made jackets that boasted on the back, "Team FDA." After 3 months of working under Jobs, Apple's head of operations decided he could not bear the pressure and he quit. For almost a year, Jobs ran operations himself because all the prospects he interviewed seemed like they were old-wave manufacturing people, he recalled. He wanted someone who could build just-in-time factories and supply chains, as Michael Dell had done. Then, in 1998, he met Tim Cook, a courtly 37-year-old procurement and supply chain manager at Compaq Computers, who not only would become his operations manager, but would grow into an indispensable backstage partner in running Apple. As Jobs recalled, "Tim Cook came out of procurement, which is just the right background for what we needed. I realized that he and I saw things exactly the same way. I had visited a lot of just-in-time factories in Japan, and I'd built one for the Mac and at Next. I knew what I wanted, and I met Tim, and he wanted the same thing. So we started to work together, and before long I trusted him to know exactly what to do. He had the same vision I did, and we could interact at a high strategic level, and I could just forget about a lot of things unless he came and pinged me." Cook, the son of a shipyard worker, was raised in Robertsdale, Alabama, a small town between Mobile and Pensacola, a half hour from the Gulf Coast. He majored in industrial engineering at Auburn, got a business degree at Duke, and for the next 12 years worked for IBM in the Research Triangle of North Carolina. When Jobs interviewed him, he had recently taken a job at Compaq. He had always been a very logical engineer, and Compaq then seemed a very sensible career option, but he was snared by Jobs' aura. 5 minutes into my initial interview with Steve, I wanted to throw caution and logic to the wind and join Apple, he later said. My intuition told me that joining Apple would be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to work for a creative genius. And so he did. Engineers are taught to make a decision analytically, but there are times when relying on gut or intuition is most indispensable. At Apple, his role became implementing Jobs' intuition, which he accomplished with a quiet diligence. Never married, he threw himself into his work. He was up most days at 4:30 sending emails, then spent an hour at the gym and was at his desk shortly after 6. He scheduled Sunday evening conference calls to prepare for each week ahead. In a company that was led by a CEO prone to tantrums and withering blasts, Cook commanded situations with a calm demeanor, a soothing Alabama accent, and silent stares. Though he's capable of mirth, Cook's default facial expression is a frown, and his humor is of the dry variety, Adam Leshinsky wrote in Fortune. In meetings, he's known for long, uncomfortable pauses, when all you hear is the sound of his tearing the wrapper off the energy bars he constantly eats. At a meeting early in his tenure, Cook was told of a problem with one of Apple's Chinese suppliers. "This is really bad," he said. "Someone should be in China driving this." 30 minutes later, he looked at an operations executive sitting at the table and unemotionally asked, "Why are you still here?" The executive stood up, drove directly to the San Francisco airport, and bought a ticket to China. He became one of Cook's top deputies. Cook reduced the number of Apple's key suppliers from 100 to 24, forced them to cut better deals to keep the business, convinced many to locate next to Apple's plants, and closed 10 of the company's 19 warehouses. By reducing the places where inventory could pile up, he reduced inventory. Jobs had cut inventory from 2 months' worth of product down to 1 by early 1998. By September of that year, Cook had gotten it down to 6 days. By the following September, it was down to an amazing 2 days' worth. In addition, he cut the production process for making an Apple computer from 4 months to 2. All of this not only saved money, it also allowed each new computer to have the very latest components available.